Civil Law will come to order. A quorum is present. Is there a motion to approve the minutes of March 9th? Representative Runbeck moves to approval of the 3-9-11 minutes. Any discussion? All those signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Same sign. Motion prevails. Members, we've got the House File 939 up first, and then Representative Dill, we believe we've got an amendment that they've worked out on House File 32 that we'll intend to bring up as well. So I'll turn the chair over to Representative Buskowski and go up to the table.
Hey, Representative Westrum, whenever you're ready to introduce your bill.
I am, Mr. Chair. Members, House File, Mr. Chair, I guess I'd first move House Files 939 be recommended to pass and re-referred to public safety.
You took the words right out of my mouth, Representative Westrum. Thank you.
And I do have an amendment that if we want to move that first, that's in the shape that I intend to discuss it or talk about it.
Okay. Would someone like to move? What's the amendment, Representative?
John, I think, has a copy.
The A1 amendment?
It'd be the John. Is that the right one?
It's the A1.
I don't want to move the wrong one.
It's the A1 amendment, Representative Western.
Okay. I'd move the A1 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Does everyone have the A1 amendment? I don't see one in my packet. Okay. Most members do. I'll get one. Representative Hilty, you don't have a copy?
No, Mr. Chair, I do have a copy. I was just wondering before we vote on the amendment if the author could. I can't see the difference between the section that's being replaced and the amendment just offhand. I was wondering if the author would explain the difference.
Representative Westrum, you want to outline the difference in the amendment before we accept it?
Mr. Chair, members, the A1 amendment would define that the department can put out a proposal, request for a proposal for savings and corrections, and use the highest cost medium security prison they run to achieve savings. And the current language doesn't specify that or direct them to do that or let them do that necessarily. So that's the big part. It also adds some criteria that they should include in their cost proposals. So we try to achieve an apples to apples comparison when they put the request for proposal out to a private or a public entity, i.e. the Department of Corrections themselves could put a bid in on this as well.
Okay, members, I believe this amendment does put it into the bill into the form that Representative Westrum would like to have it. Any other discussion? The amendment, Representative Hillstrom?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, if I could ask a question about it, or would you like me to ask the questions about the amendment after we adopt it or before we adopt it?
Let's do that, Representative Hillstrom, if that's okay with you. Anybody else? Seeing none, we'll proceed to a vote. All in favor of adopting the A1 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The amendment is adopted. Representative Westrum, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, I'll introduce the bill and talk to it as amended with the A1 amendment. But what this House file would do would be just a policy that would allow private prisons to be part of the solution we have in our state to, one, save money, and two, to house inmates. We have a private prison in my neck of the woods, western Minnesota, that is currently closed. It's actually in Representative Faulk's district. I used to represent Appleton before the redistricting of 2002. But whether they would be the likely candidate if they could save the state money or not is not certain. And so I first want to make it clear that this is a bill that think that brings reform, brings new options to the state to save money, and it's an initiative that I have worked on with others and several members that have co-authored this legislation, and it's a piece of a variety of prison bills that I've authored in the past. Representative Faulk has authored some in the past. He currently isn't a co-author on this, but the idea is how can we have a private-public mix of corrections in our state, save the taxpayers money, potentially, and also use the facility or a private prison in our state if there was savings and safety concerns were met. As the state, we have used this Appleton facility many times, or sometimes, not in the last 10 years, when we've had an excess capacity of inmates in the state prisons. And so as we face this budget crunch, how can we try to find some savings in this policy as well? And that's what this bill is really aimed at trying to do. We would require that the savings be at least 5% in the amendment. We also discuss if there would be a scenario where there would be layoffs of public workers. They would get priority to be hired back in other vacancies in the state positions. And ultimately, let's do a fair or an apples-to-apples type cost comparison and figure out if this is another avenue that could help save the state some money, bring a variety, a mixture to how we house our prisoners in our state, and also assuming it would be a CCA that operates the Appleton prison that prevails, bring back 300 to 400 jobs, or at least 200 to 300 jobs, depending upon how many inmates would be in that facility. That facility can hold up to about 1,600 inmates. It's the only facility in the state of Minnesota that pays property taxes locally, and right now is only employing about 7 people to just monitor the building and keep it up and make sure the heat is on right now, since the state pulled their last prisoners out about a year ago from their facility. Roughly speaking, there's, if you look at some costs at the state, a report that just came out recently, I understand, in fact, yesterday or last week, the average cost in Minnesota's Department of Corrections is about $95 a day per diem. That didn't even include the building costs, but it did include management and administrative costs, and et cetera, et cetera. One of the most recent contracts we've gotten from the Appleton prison that had contracted with the state of Minnesota, their costs were about $63 to $65 a day, with if you add in additional health care costs of about $14 a day that the state says it costs, you would still be at about $77 a day per diem. And so there is a difference on its face of what it's costing us, and that's an all-in price that includes the building, includes the local property taxes being paid, and every other expense that goes along with housing those inmates. And so there may be a snapshot of what an RFP might look like, but this is not a foregone conclusion. It's just a tool we give the Department of Corrections and ask them to put this out and see if this is a way we can save some money. Lastly, and in the handouts we've given you, there's a Vanderbilt study that was done in 2008. And in short, they concluded when a state has just publicly operated corrections, the increase in the costs is across the nation is about 4.6%. When states have mixed in a private-public mix of some public corrections and some private corrections, the increase is under 2%, about 1.5% increase a year. And so that's a reputable college, a reputable study that has looked at this issue. Our own Department of Administration did a study back in the 1997, I understand, and they came back with a similar conclusion that the state back in the Arne Carlson era was looking at this, and they felt that there could be some savings achieved by mixing in some private options in our current system as well. And so the numbers eventually would bear out, but that's the policy that we want to look at going forward as a state. And if we can save the taxpayers' dollars and have a policy that works with public and private, I think it's a reasonable step for the taxpayers, a reasonable step for the state, and also a way, I believe, that would help bring back many jobs in western Minnesota that are gone and that could offer the state those savings by using the prison that's sitting vacant right now otherwise. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I welcome questions. I know there's some that want to testify, and I believe in opposition to this, but I'm open to questions.
Thank you, Representative Westrom. Questions for Representative Westrom. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom, I just want to make it really clear that the language of the amendment that we adopted does not say that we're going to look at this and we're going to consider whether or not it makes sense. The language specifically says that a request for proposal must be issued and that the department must authorize one or more vendors by November 1st of 2011. So this does not say that we're going to look at it and see if a public-private system works. This says we will have a public-private system.
Representative Westrom, I'm looking at the amendment
here,
and line 1.12 says the Department of Corrections may submit a proposal. So maybe Representative Westrom, you want to address that.
Mr. Chair, that's correct. The department themselves may submit the proposal, Representative Hillstrom. If it's omitted, but I believe it's in there, there's also a criteria requiring a 5% savings. If that's omitted in the amendment, it would not be my intention to have omitted that.
It was, excuse me, Mr. Chair, I didn't catch that. It would not be your intention to what?
Representative Hillstrom.
It's not my intention to omit that 5% savings threshold that was in the original bill, and I thought it was in the amendment. But
I think it is, Representative Westrom. It is in the amendment. Further questions?
Mr. Chair, if you or Mr. Gehring could maybe point that out, I don't recall which line that was on, and I could point Representative Hillstrom into that language to read it entirely.
It is on line 1.16 in the amendment, members, subdivision 2, paragraph 1. Agree to house prisoners at a cost of the state to the state that is at least 5% below the Department of Corrections current per diem. Further questions, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, let's make this clear what it really says. It says that the Department of Corrections can bid on this, but only if they can house it at 5% below what the Department of Corrections currently charges for per diem. So what you're saying is that someone must be authorized, or one of these vendors must be selected, and that the Department of Corrections can only bid if they can bid it at 5% less than what they're currently billing or what it currently costs them as the Department of Corrections. So what you're saying is Department of Corrections, we will be doing a private prison unless you figure out a way to bid less than 5% of what you currently charge.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, the 5% savings could be from the Department of Corrections or the private bid. Let's say the private bid comes in 10% higher. It doesn't require them to use that bid then. The 5% is the benchmark of savings. If they can't achieve those savings, then we don't go that route. Whether those savings are achieved by reconfiguring their own bids or a private bid or a combination of both, that's where you would get the savings in this policy. I have read articles in other states, and I believe it's Florida and Arizona, that have, I don't know if I got the states exactly right, but I know there's a couple articles out there, Representative Hillstrom, that talk about even introducing private RFPs in states doesn't mean the privates always get them. Sometimes the public sectors also relook at how they're operating and how they're doing business, and their bids come in lower. So I'm not saying it's a foregone conclusion. You think it might be, but I don't think it has to be if those other articles are factual.
Mr. Chair.
Follow-up, Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Well, Representative Westrom, if the Department of Corrections can shift their cost any way they want within the department, then they could automatically come in less, right? If they don't count, for example, the commissioner as part of the expenses of running this prison, they could probably reduce costs. If they don't count, for example, previously when CCA ran the private prison, they didn't do treatment. They only picked the best behaved prisoners, and if someone acted badly, they shipped them back to the state facility. If someone got sick, they shipped them back to the state facility. So if the Department of Corrections were to not charge at this facility any differently than the CCA county or the CCA facility who previously housed prisoners, they could manipulate the bid to be much lower. However, if they were honest and they did in fact bid fairly, they aren't going to come in 5% less than what they currently charge, because if they did, they could just simply do that now and charge us all less for per diem. So what this bill is saying is, in fact, we are going to authorize a private facility by November 1st of 2011. And I just want to make that really clear that that is what this amendment does.
Representative Westrom, you want to respond?
Well, Mr. Chair, real briefly. Representative Hillstrom, I don't agree with your conclusion. I sure hope they wouldn't manipulate, and that's why we've tried to give them direction how to bid it. But so you're right, and the foregone conclusion is that we have a private prison facility that houses just a fraction of our state inmates, or they go to an existing one that's vacant in Representative Faulk's district right now. If it saves us money, I think it becomes a win-win for the whole state. So if your conclusion is right, that's not bad either.
Members, I point out on the A1 amendment, line 2.3 and 2.4, it talks about all labor expenses, including direct wage and salary costs, training costs, overtime, and supervisory overhead. 2.5 says total employee fringe and other personnel expenses. It does seem as though the amendment is written rather comprehensively, members. Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Westrom, as a taxpayer, I have other interests aside from the cost of corrections. As a taxpayer, I want two things more than I want the cheapest prison. I want the prison that reduces recidivism the most, and I want a prison that keeps the bad guys and gals away from my family the most. And I don't see anything in your bill that deals with the private vendor's past record on reducing recidivism or the level of success they have at keeping the bad guys locked up. And I'm wondering why there's nothing in the bill about that.
Representative Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, Again, I believe there's language that talks about the being accredited, which the Appleton facility is currently accredited. It's over licensed and oversaw by the Department of Corrections. There hasn't been a track record or a problem. Like anywhere, there always can be a scenario that is unfortunate, no matter if it's a public or private prison. But there hasn't been that type of track record. There either Representative Faulks got a very good employer in his district, a very good run facility. In fact, earlier he was here, maybe he has some of these numbers. I don't have them handy or at the top of my head, but I could get you some of the figures, Representative Hortman. But the programs they run in their facility are also very good, and they have good results with their programs. They've got a chemical and alcohol treatment. They've got educational opportunities. They've got work opportunities with the facility literally across the road, where they can actually earn money and pay back their debt to society and to their victims. And so they've got what I think is a pretty good model that matches what we have in the state or exceeds in some cases. And so we're not talking safety issues or concerns that we're running a Barney Fife type prison here. We're talking a facility that's got a very good track record, and if somebody else is going to come in and bid, they're going to have to match that same type of track record. And you could talk to Representative Faulk. I think he would concur and confirm what I'm telling you, because it's in the middle of his district now.
Follow up, Representative Hortman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I thought Representative Westrom and I were about the same age, but maybe he's older. I never saw that show with Barney Fife on it. Representative Westrom, I understand what you're saying about the as advertised CCA model, but what I'm wondering is, you have some study that indicates it's cheaper. Do you have any study that indicates it's better? And you know, it seems to me that when any of us buys a car or a new roof or siding, you find out what's the performance over time. It doesn't do me any good to buy the cheapest siding or the cheapest roof if I'm going to have to get it replaced sooner. And I'm wondering if there are any peer-reviewed studies on whether private prisons have lower long-term recidivism rates than public facilities. Because what I see is, you know, profit motive is the number one criteria of a corporation. That's their number one responsibility, is return dollars to the shareholders. It doesn't seem to me in the prison environment where that money should be our number one concern. It seems like our number one concern should be making sure these folks aren't going through a revolving door of coming back through the justice system and the expensive court part of that, and back into the facility, and oh, by the way, harming the community on the way out the revolving door and back in. And so I'm wondering if there's any data that you have that private prisons have a better track record of reducing recidivism than public prisons.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hortman, I don't have it with me. Over the 14 years I have worked on this, I know there's some information out there. I don't know that I have exactly the peer study you have. A lot of it gets to be articles. A lot of it gets to be you and I looking at dollars and cents and records and touring the prison and discussing with guards, discussing with Department of Corrections folks, in a variety of ways that we all can come to that conclusion. Maybe there's a peer review study out there that I'm not aware of. I'm also not aware that there's peer review study that say our state prison facility, the way it's operated, is got the corner on the record of no recidivism either. So I don't know that it exists either way right now.
Well,
Representative Hortman?
Mr. Chair, Representative Westrom, I guess I would propose an oral amendment on page 2 of the bill. On page 2 of the amendment, the A1 amendment, you have a list of selection criteria. Subdivision 4 is selection criteria. and it talks about establishing criteria and preferences for vendors. And it seems that one of the criteria, there's five listed, but I think after number four and before number five, we should add the recidivism rate of the provider. There has to be some way to compare what CCA is doing across the country to what the Minnesota Department of Corrections is doing here in our state. So I guess what I would do is I would add at 2.21, I'd strike the and insert an open paren for the recidivism rate of the provider, semicolon.
Okay, it's been moved to amend the amended bill by inserting between lines 2.21 and 2.22 with appropriate punctuation the recidivism rate of the provider. A discussion? Representative West.
Mr. Chair, just to clarify.
Me, Representative Westrom, just a moment.
Okay.
We're consulting with Mr. Gary. The suggestion from Mr. Gehring is to use vendor instead of provider. Is that okay, Representative Portman?
Sure.
Okay, so members, the oral amendment would read the recidivism rate of the vendor. Discussion, Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Portman, that just so I'm understanding it the same way you are, you're talking a comparable recidivism rate, so one isn't at 80% recidivism and the other's at 40%. You want to see that they're comparable or better than
right.
What our current standard is. So I would suggest we put the word comparable in front of it. But
well,
otherwise,
you know,
Mr. Chair, I think that'd be a friendly amendment.
Representative Westrom, in this list you
Representative
have
Portman.
It's just the factors to be considered, and I would assume the Department of Corrections couldn't award the contract unless it were better. So I think it kind of goes without saying. And we can work on language between this committee and its next committee.
Gehring, would you
read it the same way? Representative Westrom? What's that?
Mr. Chair, I'm just wondering if counsel would read it the same way. She's probably right.
Mr. Gehring, what's your interpretation on that? Mr. Gehring, I'm reading 2.15, and it just says the level or levels of security doesn't suggest, as far as I can see, that it needs to be better, but seems as if it's a minimum.
Right. Mr. Chair and members, I think this is a list that, as Representative Hortman mentioned, are factors to be considered, so there's no specific standard that must be better or worse. I think they're just things that the commissioner has to take into consideration when deciding whether to award a particular vendor a contract.
Okay.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that point, I just want to make it clear then, so what you're saying is that it doesn't matter, as long as it's 5% cheaper, it doesn't matter whether they have lower levels of security, whether they have a lower or a higher rate of recidivism. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom.
Hillstrom, no, that's not correct. So I think those are factors that they would consider in the proposal. So to the amendment, I think it would be, I'd consider that a friendly amendment, Representative Horton.
Okay. Is any other discussion on the amendment? Hearing none, all in favor of the oral amendment to add between lines 2.21 and 2.22 with the proper punctuation, the recidivism rate of the vendor, signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, no. The motion passes. The bill is amended accordingly. Representative Hortman, were you done with your line of questioning? Or
I'm done for now, but I do think Representative Hillstrom raised the right point, which is, if all these factors are better for a certain vendor, but they have to get the contract, if they're 5% cheaper and they suck on all these criteria, that doesn't make very much sense. So I'll look at the rest of the language.
Okay. Representative Mahoney's got a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Mr. Chair, at the presenter's table, your bill speaks to medium security facilities. you know how many we have in the state and where they are?
Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chair, I understand we have three in our state, Faribault, Lionel Lakes, and Moose Lake.
Representative Mahoney.
So, Mr. Chair, bill goes through. Do you have any idea? So what I'm trying to find out is, are you just trying to move jobs around? Are you envisioning 1,500 more prisoners in the state of Minnesota? Because I think I've been on the bonding committee for many years, and we've built a couple of prisons and remodeled a couple. Well, we've remodeled Faribault, and we put some money into Moose Lake, I think. You know, the state's done a big investment. Mm-hmm. Do you have one of these three in mind that you want to see close, so that the one in your district or next to your district opens up?
Representative Westrom.
Representative Mahoney, no, if they could put a bid together that's 5% better, they wouldn't close. If that would be the case, that's why we've written language in there that any jobs that would be laid off would be given priority to fill back in at other state jobs, so those jobs would have that priority. But to your earlier question, is it just about moving jobs around the state? No, it's also about what it more so is about reform and the taxpayers potentially getting more bang for their dollar that they pay in as we try to find ways to take our current operations and find ways to do them for the same or less expense with a similar quality outcome.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
So explain to me, if you could explain to me, you stated that Appleton Prison has seven people employed there now, making sure the function of the buildings do not deteriorate. That would then happen if one of these facilities, one of our state facilities, closed, in order to move jobs out to your district. We would have to then hire seven people to maintain the building that we own, paying whatever the wages and the fringe benefit package and all the other things. I'm trying to figure out. This sounds like Job Z for prisons, and Job Z didn't work. How it worked was it just moved jobs from one area of the state to the other. So why are we doing this? Because I from everything I've heard and read, there's no explosion of prisoners coming towards the state.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I feel like I'm repeating myself, but I will. We would do it to see if there's a reform or there's a way to help with the budget deficit and stretch the dollars we get from taxpayers a little further, even in the correction field. As good a job as they do now, there may be ways to improve that and save costs. And if there isn't, then this proposal doesn't go very far down that road. But that gets to be the reason, with a $5+ billion deficit in this state, and whether we have a deficit or a surplus, Representative Mahoney, I dare suggest, if we can find more competitive ways or change the way something is costing an agency to do it, we as the fiduciaries of the citizens of the state of Minnesota and handling their dollars ought to be looking at those types of reforms and options if they could exist, and we do have that potential. Whether it's in Appleton or in other private prison, it seems that the Appleton facility might be the best position just because they've already got the infrastructure built, but that's not a foregone conclusion necessarily either.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Mahoney.
I've got two more things, and one, you know, you have been repeating yourself with this bill for the last 12 years that I've been here, you know, two or three or four times. But I certainly hope now that you're picking a winner versus picking a loser, picking winners and losers here on the floor, we'll stop hearing your winners and losers speech. But, you know, if my memory is serving me correctly, the prison system in Minnesota got pretty beaten up a few years back about their high per diems, and they've done as good a job as, you know, they've come back and said that they've done their best job on it. So if they've driven down costs, it seems to me the only place left to go after costs is in employee wages. So are you trying to just drive down wages? Because that's certainly what it looks like to me here from the prison employees. And please explain to me how you're not, and not just use this reform, because you're not reforming anything. All you're doing is saying drive down the cost, drive down the wages of the public employees. That's what I'm seeing here.
Representative Mahoney, I had heard that the Department of Corrections is going to be looking at potentially renting 300 beds from county jails by 2014 or 2015. So it sounds like some of this need is certainly there. But Representative Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, 300 is a long way from 1,500.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, and I do think there's some other testifiers, so some of these questions might also get covered when they are able to testify. But Representative Mahoney, if that's where some of the savings comes in more competitive employee packages, I suppose that's one of the pieces that might save money. Those jobs in Appleton are probably towards the top end of what anybody's getting paid out there, and so we're not trying to drive those prices down. In fact, they would drive up the prices in Representative Falk's district, in my district, where some of the workers drive from, because they drive 60 miles for these jobs, and so I would guess there must be similar to or comparable, certainly to the market in that area, and comparable to other parts of the state, because to drive 60 miles for a job is not a short task. But I've got constituents in Alexandria that are laid off from the prison, and that is some over 60 miles to Appleton. They drove every day for their job, so they were good packages. Again, that's left up to the party that submits the bid, and how they've got their prison designed, how they staff it, how they compensate their staff. And they have to hire trained guards and et cetera, et cetera. That's all. That's the same as you bidding, or your company you work for bidding a plumbing job. And sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, and sometimes it's because you figure it's going to take longer than it would, but other times it's because you figured out a better way to streamline and do the project quicker than what somebody else did, and do it with a different type of management than somebody else has. And so that's the competition that you get. It's worked. If you read the other articles, read the studies, it seemed to have that same trend and positive effect in other states, and so I suggest we would have a similar type of outcome here. And if not, the bill provides for 5% savings in order to implement this.
Mr. Chair,
follow up, Representative Mahoney.
Mr. Chair and Representative Westrom, no company I work for would do a plumbing bid because I'm not a plumber. And again, your 5% is typically coming out of the employee's hide. So, again, you're trying to help corporations at the expense of the employees. And you've been trying to do this for a long, long time. you know, I think I respect the public employees a little bit more than you do.
Sounds Mr. like that. Chair. Representative Westrom, they didn't
Mr.
really...
Mr. Chair, I think we can
ahead,
move on.
Representative Westrom.
Representative Mahoney, if you want to go down that road, why don't you go right up to Representative Falk's office and tell him you don't care about his constituents that are sitting on unemployment right now if they're so lucky to continue to receive unemployment? Because what you're saying is you don't care that they're unemployed and that they're not... that they're not able to house any prisoners. Okay. I can't believe you would say that.
We're going to move to the next thread of discussion here, members. Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have a couple of questions. The first one, I guess, would be for the chair, which is typically when a bill is referred to a committee, there is something in the bill that is specifically under the purview of the committee to which it's referred, and I'm having difficulty finding what that is in this bill. Could you help me out with that?
Are you talking to the chair or to the to me as the author at this point, Representative Hilty? I assume it's to me.
Representative Hilty, I understand that there's there are relationships to potentially to civil commitments dealing with the Department of Human Services, and that's why the committee's hearing the bill. Representative Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I didn't see that anywhere in the bill, and moreover, it's difficult for me to see how that would apply to this committee in any case. But
well, we are
nonetheless,
we are hearing
Chair,
the bill.
Well,
represent
I realize that we're not going to do anything about that. I would. I'll try to figure out why this bill could possibly have been referred to civil law rather than the Committee on Public Safety. But I would like to point out before I get to the question, Mr. Chair, that the study to which Representative Westrom referred, the Vanderbilt study, on the back of the study, we are told who financed this study, and oddly enough, it was the Corrections Corporation of America and also the Association for Private Correctional and Treatment Organizations. So I'm sure that that's why it is an unbiased study. Representative Westrom, you know as well as I do that there's really only a couple of ways that savings could be achieved over what we're doing in this state currently. As far as staffing is concerned, you could achieve savings by employing as few staff as possible, by paying them as little as possible, and by not spending much on training. None of those seem to me to be desirable things to do for running a prison that actually has positive outcomes for the people that are incarcerated there. There's another possibility, of course, which is that you can cut back on how you treat prisoners. You can cut back on the quality of food that you give them, for instance. You can cut back on health care. You can cut back on treatment. But Representative Westrom, there isn't any way other than those that you're going to save money. And really what we're talking about here is taking decent, well-paying jobs from one part of the state and moving them to another part of the state for no reason other than that that facility is there because of a bad decision, a business decision that the Correction Corporation of America made several years ago.
Representative Westrom, you want to respond? And Representative and members, after you respond, Representative Westrom, I think we're going to move on to the other testifiers and get through those.
Mr. Chair, I would just add to your list, Representative Hilty. You've got building efficiencies. You've got energy costs efficiencies that also could go onto the list of ways you save in a business and design, et cetera, et cetera. So I think your list is partial, but there's more ways. But you're on the right track that there's a variety of ways you can save. And if we leave that up to individuals bidding on it, they can deploy the smarts to figure out the ways to most efficiently do that. And still meeting the standards of prison security, Representative Hilty. And if CCA is the selected one, they've got a good record. Appleton's a well-run facility, and if you've had a chance to tour it, I think you would agree. We've got well-run state facilities, too. But if they're costing more than what we could otherwise do it for, the resistance by some to not look at that is an obligation I think we owe the taxpayer.
Okay, members, we're going to move on to the rest of our testimony. Please hold your questions so we get there. Anybody here from the Department of Corrections, Mr. Christ or Mr. Roy? Please introduce yourself and your affiliation for the record, please, and then appreciate if you proceed.
Mr. Chairman, members, my name is David Christ. I'm the Deputy Commissioner for Facility Services of the Department of Corrections. If I may, I just want to give the committee a little bit of background of our history with the private prison out at Prairie Correctional. We had been doing business with them for approximately 10 years. We, at one point, had 1,200 Minnesota state offenders in that facility, and we dropped our participation with that facility as our populations started to level off. So at about this time last year, CCA notified us that the 200 Minnesota prisoners that were at the facility at that time were not sufficient for them to maintain that facility and break even, or it wasn't close to their break-even point, actually. And so they terminated the arrangement with us at that point, and we took those offenders at that point, housed them in county jails, and today we are at a point in our population where it is leveled off, and we are not renting beds from any entity at this point. We've got all of our offenders in our own facilities. The population management plan that the department has moving forward calls for us to keep offenders in our facilities for the most part until about the middle to end of 2012, when we're going to have to start renting a few beds again, and it's our intention to rent those beds from county jails to begin with, bring that population up to around 300 offenders, and then at least the present state of our population management plan, which I should state was devised during the Pawlenty administration. Present state would be that if the beds at Prairie Correctional Facility are still available to us, we would start to rent beds out there again probably in 2013-2014. So that's a little bit of background. I think I can address many of the questions that have been raised by committee members, and would certainly stand to provide more information. But first, to the question of recidivism. The Department of Corrections general recidivism rate is about 33% of offenders return to prison after 3 years. And so that answers the question in general. But we've got other peer-reviewed studies that have been published that are showing real good recidivism results as because of the programs that we operate. a recently published program said that, or study said that our CD programs reduce recidivism by about 23%. Our sex offender programs reduce recidivism by 27%. Our education program reduces recidivism by about 29%. And our recent initiative with the Minnesota Comprehensive Offender Reentry Program is shown to reduce reincarceration after 3 years by 57% by applying these techniques. All of these reports are available on the department's website. There are peer-reviewed studies that speak to recidivism rates in private prisons. And I don't know exactly which one, but I do know which states. In a recent study in Florida, recent studies in Florida and Oklahoma showed that there was either no effect on recidivism after offenders were housed in a private prison, or that recidivism actually went up after those offenders were housed in private prisons. And I've got the two citations for those academic studies with me today that I can provide to the committee. I want to speak for a minute about some of the cost comparisons that are represented in the bill as amended with A1. First, one unique thing about the Department of Corrections is that our per diems are transparent. We publish them every year. We publish them for each of our facilities. The most costly medium custody facility that we've got in the department is at Lino Lakes. That per diem last fiscal year was $83.50. And that includes a very, very intensive staffing and program provision for 200 sex offenders and for 300 chemically dependent offenders. So the lowest per diem of a medium custody facility is in the neighborhood of $66 a day. So requiring us to calculate based on the most expensive, which happens to be the place where we've got the most treatment, puts us at a disadvantage. It also puts any private bidders at the advantage of pretty much knowing what our bid would be right up front. And that strikes me as going against the spirit of competitive bidding. Usually bidders don't know what the other guy's going to bid. They give it their best shot. Here we're up front, and that puts us at a disadvantage. Further, it would be extremely difficult for us to figure out the hypothetical cost comparison of what the imputed tax impact of that Lino Lakes facility would be. I suppose we could come in and hire an appraiser to come in and appraise the cost of all of the buildings and then hypothetically calculate what the property tax would be on that building and then somehow figure out if we were a corporation, how much money would we be making on that operation, and what sort of corporate tax would we be paying into the economy on that, and what sort of property taxes would we be paying. That would be very, very difficult for us to figure out and to factor into any kind of competitive bid. I will agree with Representative Westrom that the most recent track record of the Prairie Correctional Facility should that be the facility chosen, was good. They had a good warden. They had a good staff out there. It hasn't always been as good as it was when that facility closed. And now all those staff are gone. There's no guarantee that they'll be coming back. And so it's going to be hard to compare track records when we don't know what the staff of a facility coming in would be. The other thing that I would caution the committee about is that the last contract that we had with Prairie Correctional, if we were still renting beds from them today, the contract would be for $67.05 per day per offender. Built into that contract was an automatic 3.25% increase every fiscal year. So if we still had offenders there next year, we'd be paying $69.23. And just a quick and dirty comparison, you start adding in those automatic increases plus the cost to the department to concentrate our most mentally ill inmates in our facilities, our most sick inmates into our facilities, our most misbehaving offenders into our facilities. We figured out a way to calculate that. It's just under $15 a day. So if you start adding up that $69 plus the $15, you're right up against what it costs at our most expensive medium custody facility. And you're way over what it costs at our least expensive medium custody facility. I would note that at one point when we had 1,200 inmates at that facility, that was about 11% of our total prison population at a time when the national average for states housing offenders in private prisons was about 5% per state system. So we exceeded the national average when we were using that facility. And I would submit that it is a risk to any state corrections system to get too dependent on private prisons. If you get too large a population in private prisons, then essentially, and you can't build your way out of that, essentially you're held hostage to needing to continue to rent those beds at whatever the rate becomes. And that can be very expensive as well. Finally, as somebody alluded, it costs a lot of money first to lay off the staff. A DOC facility, it would literally cost millions to do the severance pay if we had to lay off DOC staff to facilitate this initiative. And it would cost us probably hundreds of thousands of dollars to maintain a facility if we emptied it, because we have to heat the facility. Our facilities are built to be heated and climate controlled. If we stop heating them, if we take out all the water, then we're subject to the effects of the very cold weather. We're subject to the effects of moisture and mold and other problems. And we have the, if we're ever intend to use them again, we've got the necessity to provide security 24 hours a day to prevent vandalism to those facilities. And we wouldn't be good stewards of the state's assets if we did otherwise. So, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for questions with that.
Thank you, Mr. Crist. We've got a question. Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was interested in just the fact that this whatever the population that would be housed would require, of course, less of your time and your energy and so on and so forth. And I wondered also about just the liability factors. I mean, the contract with CCA, did that did that take, you know, did they cover the liability on those prisoners, or was that still the responsibility of the state?
Mr. Crist.
Mr. Chair, Representative Runbeck, anybody can sue anybody about anything, and offenders, if they were at a private prison while committed to the Commissioner of Corrections, could certainly bring legal suit against that facility, but they can also target the Commissioner of Corrections as being the decision maker who placed them there. So there is some legal liability. There is ongoing questions about the liability related to use of force in private prisons and potential lethal force, potential other kinds of force in private prisons. I really don't know whether that is a well-settled question in law or not, but it's always an issue of liability.
Representative Runbeck?
Thank you, Mr. Crist, is it?
Mr. Crist, yes.
Thank you.
Other questions? Representative Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Crist, thank you for your testimony. Can you tell me, through the relationship that we had with CCA, when there was a prisoner at CCA who had challenges, violent outbursts, advanced chemical dependency issues, advanced mental health issues, what did CCA do with those prisoners?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, first of all, they wouldn't accept that type of prisoner if we knew that he had those characteristics up front. If they developed while he was there, they asked us to remove him from that facility and bring him back to one of the state facilities.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So was that also the case with medical conditions? For example, somebody developed cancer or a liver issue or a kidney issue. Was that also the case?
Mr. Chairman,
Mr.
Representative
Crist.
Hillstrom, yes.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So basically, they kept the prisoners that didn't cost them as much, and everybody that cost more, they sent back to the state facilities. Is that correct?
Mr. Crist.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Hillstrom, that's one way to look at it, yes.
Thank you.
Other questions?
Sir.
Oh, Representative Peterson, I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And this is strictly anecdotal, but it also, I'm asking if it would also apply to chemically dependent young people. I got a very poignant letter, my first, I believe it was my first term, at least when Appleton was operating, from a mother whose son had been sent to Appleton for, and his reason for being incarcerated was that he was chemically dependent. And she said he received no assistance or help for the chemical dependency. She wanted him moved and hadn't been able to accommodate that movement at all, and felt that he was not getting the kind of assistance he needed, and he was depressed, and she went on and on. And that letter keeps, remaining in my mind about, you know, what we do with young people who really, he must have been a felon, but he was probably convicted of maybe selling or using drugs, I'm not sure which, but he definitely was chemically dependent. So would they deal with those kinds of issues?
Mr. Crist.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Peterson, I'm not sure of the time period when you received this communication with your constituent, but I know that at the time that our business relationship with the Prairie Correctional ended, they did have a chemical dependency program there. And what I can't recall off the top of my head is whether it was what we call a psychoeducational program or whether it was a primary treatment program. I could find that out and get back to you, but I just don't recall right now.
Representative Westrom, do you have a comment?
Well, Mr. Chair, I think Mr. Crist covered a little bit of it. I was going to tell Representative Peterson I know treatment programs exist out there. I've met some of the staff and the parties that perform those programs. So, but I think Mr. Crist verified that. Mr. Chair, committee members, just back to the prior questions, Representative Runbeck and Representative Hillstrom. What the department has done is figured about a $14 to $15 charge for prisoners as additional health care costs, and that's the best figures they've come up with. And so if their number is even is right, then you're talking potentially an apples or an even Steven situation based on the numbers Mr. Chris gave us for last year for Llano Lakes, and then using next year's CCA's per diem at $69. But giving the benefit as he's given us the numbers, you're possibly talking a wash. In that's adding the $14 to $15 a day cost that the state says it costs extra. But CCA in their contract does provide health care, albeit Abbott Northwestern isn't there. And so when somebody gets critically ill, Representative Runbeck or Representative Hillstrom, they do what they would do in any facility and probably get them to bigger and better facilities wherever they're located. But Representative Runbeck, to your issue, I understand in the contract CCA has to indemnify the state if there would be an incident out in their facility. There, that's what they would buy insurance for. So I think that's the answer to your question as well.
Mr. Chris, do you had a comment?
Briefly, Mr. Chair, I just wanted to make plain that $15 a day charge includes the cost to the department for having an extra concentration of mentally ill offenders, serious medical cases, but it also includes transportation of offenders back and forth between a facility, case management, and records administration for those cases. It's not solely medical.
Representative Peterson, a follow-up or?
No, I was still unclear, I guess, about whether they offered. I'm understanding that they do offer those services at the facilities, and you would continue to offer those facilities in the future. Is that part of this application?
That's what I understand, Representative okay. Peterson. Any comment from Mr. Christ or Representative Westrom on that before we move on?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry. I was answering a question to Representative Westrom. I didn't hear the question.
I didn't either.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Would you like me to reiterate?
Please do.
It was really a follow-up on where we had been before, Mr. Chair. Either of Mr. Crisp or Representative Westrom, and it dealt with the application form. Would that also include, you know, the kinds of things that would be needed, such as chemical dependency treatment for prisoners, no matter, you know, with this application form? Are those the services, besides health services and the other kinds of things, would all that be included?
Representative Westrom?
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, the short answer would be yes. That'd be a similar type of service that they've been providing. Now, I know in discussions, they in Appleton are willing to negotiate any of those things, and if they want to just provide a level that the county jails are providing, they would ramp back and provide just that similar type of level. So I think it's an interesting point. I mean, people they talk about using the county jails, which also makes some sense, I believe, and you can save some money, but there's a lot less being provided in those situations as far as health care and chemical dependency and other programs, far less than what we'd be talking with CCA. But, I mean, that's another option. All of those things are proposals that can either be in or out of a bid.
Okay. Anyone else who would like to testify for or against the bill? Okay, thank you, Mr. Christ.
Mr. Chair?
Yes,
just before Mr. Christ leaves, one thing I'd like to clarify, and I That was the question I was asking them, but I believe $83 at Lino Lakes is what they call an operating per diem. I don't believe that includes the building costs, and I'm wondering if Mr. Chris has that number when they add the building costs, which they call that statutory per diem.
Mr. Chris, can you comment on that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Westrom, I don't have that number with me, but I can get it for the committee.
So it is a separate number, Mr. Chris, is that right?
Mr. Chair, there in statute there is a per diem that we refer to as the statutory per diem, and that's the number to which Representative Westrom is referring, I believe. I just don't have that with me.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Christ. Okay, folks, please come up. Please introduce yourself and your affiliation for the record, please. And if we can make it fairly short, we need to move on here soon and vote on this bill. We've got another bill to be heard yet today. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, I'm Julie Blyle, Legislative Director for AFSCME Council 5, and we're here today to testify in opposition to Representative Westrom's bill. I think when you start talking costs, you need to look at what the motivation is. The private sector is looking at making a profit, and correctional facilities and public safety is an area that needs to be provided by government and should not be looked at where it can be done the cheapest. The way the bill is structured even goes further, I think, than the bills that we've seen in the past, because now you're asking the Department of Corrections to come into the process, but to also change the way that they proceed in bidding. And why are we asking our own facilities, correctional facilities in the state of Minnesota, to bid on public safety? It's a basic function of government. And then if we look back to the original facility in Appleton, it was a public facility. It was a public facility when it was built. The city of Appleton was involved in it. Our sister council, AFSCME Council 5, didn't represent the employees there, but our sister council, AFSCME Council 65, did. When CCA purchased the facility, the first thing that happened was they threw out the union. They threw out AFSCME Council 65. The employees no longer had representation. This is just another step in the process as far as looking at privatization, lowering employees' wages, decreasing benefits, and that's the motivation. And it's the motivation at the public's expense. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Blyle. Would you like to testify too, sir? Or
Mr.
no?
Chairman, this is Tim Henderson. He is our business rep representing the correctional officers throughout the state of Minnesota for AFSCME Council 5. If there are any questions, if not, I just asked him to come for the...
Okay, very good. Representative Gruenhagen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, to the testifiers. You know, here's my problem is that, or maybe you can address it, is that monopolies tend inherently, historically, to become inefficient, okay? And that's why competition tends to eliminate that. And with government, you're tending to be dealing with a monopoly. Now, I'll give you an example. If you look at our public pensions for public employee versus the private sector, in my opinion, it's out of balance because we have a defined benefit, and most of the so regardless of return, you get your benefit out of the plan. And in the private sector, we have benefit out of the plan. And in the private sector, we have defined contribution, so your return can fluctuate depending on the experience of the plan. So what happens with monopolies, they tend to adopt policies and procedures, whether with their employees or whatever, that puts them out of balance with the private sector. And I'm not against people earning a good living wage and having good benefits, as long as it's comparable and it has some competition to it. And I see the private option as providing that type of necessary irritation. Competition is irritable. I sell insurance. I just soon have a law that everybody has to buy from me in the county, but you know, then I'd get to work at 10 o'clock rather than at 6 o'clock. Okay. So, again, with a monopoly, the incentive is not there to become efficient and to keep things in balance. And when you introduce competition to the private sector, things become more in balance. I could give you several other examples, but would you respond to that, please?
Ms. Blau?
Mr. Chairman and Representative Grunhagen, I'll gladly respond to that because you're taking an all-out attack on the pensions that public employees in the state of Minnesota receive. Just like the press conference that happened this morning at 10 a.m. in the state capitol, in which senators went after public employee pensions. Our members have given up wages and taken decreases in their health insurance, increased premiums, increased co-pays, increased deductibles. They have deferred wages in order to keep their pensions. But most importantly, they did the responsible thing last session. They could have easily come to this legislature and said, no, we're not going to participate. We're not going to participate. Because you know what? When the stock market crashed, it wasn't the fault of the public employees that the stock market crashed. What did they do? The public employees, AFSCME and the other unions, came to the table and said, we are going to participate in this. We took caps on the cost of living for retirees. We have increased the employee contribution for the pensions. And we have done this in order to stabilize the pension funds in Minnesota. And right now, the pension funds, the funding ratios look pretty good. There isn't a crisis. The attacks that public employees are receiving are totally uncalled for. And whether we're looking at it from a privatization point, from this standpoint, or while we sit here over in the Senate, they're taking away the right to strike from teachers. So what is the bottom line here?
Okay, members, and let's move on from this thread and get back onto the force of the bill. Oh. Representative Grunhagen, you got something
just
real quick?
Just a quick response. See, competition does that naturally, and that's, I think, the key. And so things do get out of balance. And what competition does, and especially in the private sector, because companies go out of business, people lose not only their job but also their benefits. And what competition does, it does naturally what a monopoly has to be sometimes coerced or forced to do.
Okay, let's stay on the bill here. Representative Hortman, I believe, has a question. Then I think we've got an amendment being offered.
I'm anxious to get the amendment and the vote on the bill, so I'll pass.
Okay, thank you, Representative Hortman. Representative Hillstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would move the DE1 amendment.
Before we do, Representative Hillstrom, can we make sure there's nobody else to, anybody else that wants to testify before we move on? Just want to make sure. Okay, I'm sorry. Thanks, Representative Hillstrom. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. The DE1 amendment is actually Representative Smith's bill. Representative Smith has introduced a bill that states that after July 1st of 2011 that the commissioner shall not allow inmates to be housed in facilities that are not owned and operated by the state, a local unit of government, or a group of local units of government. Members, this actually is the bill that would stop the state from putting prisoners in private prisons. Members, studies have shown, and I have a few over here that I can share with members, that there are more violent incidences, 50% much more likely in private prisons for violent incidences. Private prisons also pose an increased risk of prisoner escape. There is less escape in government-run prisons, less substance abuse, and greater recreational and rehabilitation measures in government facilities. Members, previously we've had conversations about CCA, who has run the facility in Minnesota previously. They cherry-picked the prisoners. They would not take the more expensive prisoners. And I also have some sheets that I can share here about specific incidences that CCA has had across the country. With the they pay less for their employees. They have less staff monitoring, and it actually does impact public safety. For example, in 2008, there was a officer employed with the CCA who was charged with possession of cocaine with the intent to distribute within the facility. In 2007, the U.S. Department of Labor investigated that privately run prisons' selection process. They disproportionately rejected non-Hispanic job applicants there actually was a settlement of $238,629 or $945 each for those who were inappropriately rejected. They also tend to have less staff and keep their employees. We require some retirement at earlier ages. For example, in 2005, they celebrated the 80th birthday of one of the correctional officers. They state that this gentleman pulled an aggressive inmate off another inmate. He's not just a correctional officer. They're dang proud to have him. They also have, in 2008, the Department of Corrections withdrew in Tulsa, withdrew more than $589,000 in payments to private prison operators in the past year because of staffing shortages. More than five payments of $40,000 or more that were withheld since December of that year for failing to fill vacancies within 45 days for medical staff. Also, 19 guards. They felt that it was unsafe. They failed to provide payments. I have it from across the country. Private prisons are not necessarily safe prisons for Minnesotans. The bill as it is proposed says it doesn't matter whether they are better or worse at treatment, education, keeping the community safe, or recidivism rates. All the current bill as it's proposed says is that you must authorize one or more vendor by November 1st of 2011 if they are 5% cheaper. If you don't staff them, you don't have treatment, you don't have nurses, and you don't take expensive prisoners, anybody can save 5%. So I would encourage members to vote for Representative Smith's bill, which is the DE1 amendment, and I would ask for a roll call.
Okay, roll call has been requested. Any discussion before we move to the vote?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I'm glad she asked for a roll call because I was going to ask for one otherwise. So we'll see what people's position is on this. But Mr. Chair, committee members, to respond to some of those issues, this is actually Representative Hillstrom's bill that Representative Smith in the past has signed on to. He has chosen to introduce it as a this year, but Representative Hillstrom for several years has introduced this or a similar bill to this, so I understand she's been against private prisons and using the Appleson facility for years. Mr. Chair, members, I would just urge you to vote this down. I think Representative Falk thinks the prison in his district might do a better job than what Representative Hillstrom and you've seen represented today seems to think they do. You even heard it from the deputy commissioner. CCA does have a good record in Minnesota, and if they were the chosen one, I think we would all be very confident and doing the taxpayers good by introducing this option as one way to keep competition and keep our costs of housing corrections inmates down. And so I think this would not be the right way to go for the state of Minnesota if we want to start finding other ways to reform and saving the taxpayer dollars in a safe, practical manner.
Mr. Chair.
Okay, Representative Hillstrom, I'd remind the committee that Representative Dill is waiting patiently for his bill. Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to say Representative Smith had the bill first, then he went in the minority. I picked it up when I was in the majority, and now Representative Smith has the bill back.
Thank you, Representative Hillstrom. The committee clerk will take the roll.
Representative Westrom?
No.
Representative Jaskowski?
No.
Representative Lush is absent. Representative Grunhagen?
No.
Representative Hillstrom?
Yes.
Representative Hilty?
Aye.
Representative Holberg?
No.
Representative Hoppe?
No.
Representative Hortman?
Yes.
Representative Mahoney?
Yes.
Representative Mazerol?
No.
Representative Pepin? Representative Peterson?
Yes.
Representative Runbeck?
No.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Simon?
Yes.
Representative Wardlow?
No.
Failed. 9-6.
By a vote of 6, 4, and 9 against, the amendment fails. It is not adopted. Members, any parting questions? I think we vetted this one pretty well. Representative Hortman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To the bill as amended, I just would encourage members to vote against the bill. I understand your concern, Representative Westrom, about trying to reduce the expense to the public, but I think the bill misses the mark because really, you know, what I was getting at in Subdivision 4, you would really need to substantially rework Subdivision 2 so that we weren't just looking at costs, that we're looking at the issues of protecting the public both in the short term by preventing escapes and in the long term from just paying more by putting people back in. And so because the bill so substantially misses the mark on trying to accomplish what I think you're trying to accomplish, which is save money for the taxpayers, I would encourage members to vote against it. And I have to articulate a little bit of a frustration with the bills that we're looking at and the amount of information we have as we consider the bills. I think as a legislature, the public expects that we're doing our homework and that we're making decisions based on facts and evidence. And I know, you know, we come into this with biases. I think Republicans come in with the general bias that government employees are wasteful and inefficient compared to the private sector. And I know Democrats come in with the bias that government employees are effective and doing the best job and would beat a private corporation any day because there's not a built-in profit margin. But if we want to get past those biases and actually make good decisions for the people of the state, we have to look at data. And I am sure there's data on what CCA does, what the Department of Corrections is doing. And I think the last 2 hours would have been better spent if we were looking in detail at line by line the Department of Corrections budget to find where it is they're being wasteful or more expensive than the private sector. And so I would hope as members that when we bring ideas forward, you know, there's a lot of things that sound good, but then when you get the information, you find out, oh, it's more complicated than I thought, or, you know, it's not what I thought at all. Somebody that I thought was bad at something is actually pretty good at it. I don't think we have enough information, even if this was a good idea, which I don't think it is, to make a conclusion based on what's been presented to the committee today. So, members, I hope, you know, based on the information that's been presented and the lack of work at Subdivision 2 at really getting at quality and price, that members would vote no on the bill.
Representative Hillstrom.
Roll call, Mr. Chair.
Okay, roll call has been requested. The clerk will, Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for your indulgence. I'll be brief. I'd just like to remind people that great Democrat Henry Ford had enough insight into what would make his business work that he declared publicly and followed through on his belief that he had to pay his employees enough that they could actually afford the product that they were helping create. Everything in the economy is not about doing things the absolute cheapest that you can do it. Everything in state government is not about driving down costs when you're basically trying to make sure that a significant portion of the population actually is worse off. And that's what this bill is about. There's only one way that it could possibly save costs, and that is by paying employees less. The race to the bottom is not the way to be going in this state. We're seeing that with bill after bill. Representative Westrom, I've seen the vehicle in which you transport yourself, and it is not a Yugo or a Geo Metro. There are other considerations that people have in selecting what they wish to employ other than just the lowest cost. And this is absolutely a case in which we should reject the whole idea that the only thing that matters is the lowest cost. What we're looking for, particularly in this, is the highest quality.
Okay, members, I think we've vetted this very well. The committee clerk will take the roll. I'm sorry. We do need to renew the motion. Representative Westrom, you want to renew your motion?
I do, Mr. Chair, and I'm going to be very brief. But Representative Portman, Representative Hilty, don't take my word for it. Go talk to your colleague, Andrew Falk, and I think he'll help enlighten you on his experience as well. I know that to be true. So, members, I urge your support. And if there's items in Section 2, Representative Hortman, that can be improved, it's going to public safety next, and I'll take a look at that again.
Representative Westrom renews his motion that the that House File 939 pass and be referred to the Public Safety Committee. The committee clerk will take the roll.
Representative
as amended, be referred as amended twice. Be referred to the Public Safety Committee.
Representative Westrom.
Yes.
Representative Joskowski.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Yes.
Representative Hillstrom.
No.
Representative Hilty.
No.
Representative Holberg.
Yes.
Representative Hoppe.
Yep.
Representative Hortman.
No.
Representative Mahoney.
No.
Representative Mazerall.
Yes.
Representative Peterson.
No.
Representative Runbeck.
Yes.
Representative Scott.
Yes.
Representative Simon.
No.
Representative Wardlow.
Yes.
With 9 yeas and 6 nays.
By a vote of 9-6, the motion as amended does pass, will be referred to the Public Safety Committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Okay, members, we have Representative Dill is here with House File 32. Representative Dill, I understand there is an amendment and some work that's been done. Can you review what's been done and move the amendment, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And if you take a look at the amendment, I'll explain it. On 1.16 of the amendment, it establishes that all claims are $1 million in tort, a maximum liability for nonprofit organizations engaged in or administering outdoor recreational activities funded in whole or in part by the state or operating under an authorization or a permit issued by an agency or department of the state. So we've narrowed this down dramatically as to who it applies to in terms of the $1 million tort. This on lines 1.15 through 1.19, that has to do with the state's tort. If you look on the back at lines 2.21 through 2.23, it is the exact same language that would then apply to a municipality. And then there's the line 3.32, the effective date, is referenced in that final section of the bill where there are changes made. Now, members, this bill does not prohibit the state or a municipality in their judgment to require liability over the tort. In other words, they may ask the local unit of government or the state may ask that there be some higher amount of liability insurance for a particular event as deemed necessary by your local unit of government or the state who may or may not be issuing a permit. But it does establish that the maximum liability on the part of a state or local government is $1 million for those types of activities. Now, last time we were here, we talked about visiting with the interest because we had few people come forward with some questions and some objections, actually. So since then, we've worked with the Rollerbladers Association, the Minnesota Off-Road Association, the All-Terrain Vehicle Association of Minnesota, the United Snowmobilers Association, and the Twin Cities Bike Club on this bill. We also got a checkoff on this language from the Department of Administration, from Ms. Turner from the St. Paul Travelers, that's who's testified on the bill at the previous hearing, and the LMC here, Mr. Grunhofer, is here as well. I don't believe any of them are going to testify on the bill today. The only one that we have not been able to come to peace in the valley on is with Mr. Carlson with the Minnesota Association of Justice. So that being said, those are an encompassing and comprehensive list of people who have contacted us with any kind of objection or any type of concern or support or otherwise, and we've addressed that in this amendment that is before you today.
Okay, can someone move the amendment?
Mr. Chair, I'll move the amendment.
Representative Holberg moves the DE2 amendment. Any more discussion? Any discussion on the amendment?
Mr. Chair, whether Mr. Carlson wants to testify on this, or maybe we should get it on and then let him testify.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I think that'd
be
a good
better.
Idea.
Okay, thank you, Representative Dill and Representative Westrom. Mr. Carlson, please identify yourself and affiliation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Joel Carlson. I'm here for the Association for Justice, and we do agree that the language is significantly improved, but just want you to know a couple things that we believe this is a hard cap of $1 million as it relates to events. We don't think the wording is particularly clear as it relates to whether or not the organization is funded in whole or in part by the state, or if it is the activity that is funded in whole or in part by the state. We also think that operating under the authorization of a permit issued by an agency or a department is something like a street permit to close down the street for an event. And you need to know that these nonprofit organizations are not small. I have with me a report from the Run, Walk, and Ride Fundraising Council, all of which would be covered by this bill with a $1 million liability cap. The American Cancer Society Relay for Life raised $430 million. The Komen Race for the Cure, $113 million. These are not small organizations. They're not small events. We have some concerns about the broad scope of this bill. We are not talking about small trail organizations that are now covered by this bill. And if you look at the top 100 nonprofit corporations in Minnesota, you'll see the Blue Cross is the top nonprofit in Minnesota with revenues, it looks like, about in excess of $9 billion. But a number of these nonprofit organizations, private colleges, McAllister, Concordia, Hamlin, all organized outdoor athletic activities, many of which are somehow done in cooperation or under authorization with a permit issued by the city. So this is broad in its scope. We're not talking just about the trail club. And that question that we haven't answered and we still haven't answered is, what is the insurance issue that we're trying to address? This does nothing about the insurance. I went online, this is why I was listening to the prison bill, and I go to ATV online, and if you join the ATV club, when you can sponsor a poker run, which I like to go on, by the way, I love snowmobiling, but you know, you go from different establishments along the snowmobile trail, poker runs, trail rides for cycles and ATVs, the cost of liability insurance for that event for a club is $161. I don't know what insurance problem we're trying to address here and what the cost of that insurance is, but this bill has far-reaching implications beyond a simple trail club. It is not just limited to them. You know, I don't know what everybody's seen the guy doing the Do the Do commercials. I mean, I think he's a riot from Blue Cross Blue Shield. They're covered. That's an outdoor recreational activity that Blue Cross sponsors. Now they get the protection of this. I'm not saying we don't want to help the trail clubs. I'm saying that this language really doesn't get us to that point. And one other point why I say this is a hard cap. If you read chapter 466, you will note under 466.06 that there is a specific exemption for any municipality that buys insurance above the cap. Without that, you don't get to anything additional. This language here is a hard cap. There's no provision that says if you procure insurance above the cap that you waive the cap like it does for a municipality. So this is, in law, a hard cap of $1 million, and even if they ask for additional insurance, even if they required it, it'd be my position that if there was a case, and there have not been any, if there was a case, you would be limited to the $1 million because the legislature said your exposure is $1 million, period. Happy to work on this bill, Mr. Chairman, as it moves forward, and I think there are some insurance questions that should be asked, whether it's in commerce or judiciary policy, because I think that we have an issue that needs to be addressed. I'm just concerned that this is such a large hammer that it has substantial unintended consequences. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, quick questions as we are at the end of our committee time. Representative Hortman?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What was the motion? Which committee is the bill going to next?
The committee, or the bill, is to go to the Judiciary Policy and Finance Committee.
And would the chair of the Commerce Committee be intending to hear the bill?
Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Representative Hortman. I have not talked to the author about it. I hadn't thought about it before this. I think it's something we should think about, and if the parties are going to get together and work on it, come up with a compromise that we're okay with. My position is I don't know. If they can work something out, I don't know that we need to see it.
Mr. Chair, the reason I ask is it does really seem to be an insurance issue. Representative Dill, you know, testified about the shooting club or the riding club and their difficulty in getting insurance, and so I think as people continue to work on the bill, the issue is really about the procurement of insurance, and so it seems like it should go to Commerce on the way to the floor if it makes it out of this committee and any other committees it goes to. But it's just to be fair, I'll say the same thing about this bill as the last one, is we are kind of missing the context of what is precisely the problem that we need to solve. And I know we had testimony last time, but a little more information, I think, would make better legislation.
Mr. Carlson, thank you for your testimony. Members, before us, we have the DE2 amendment. All in favor of adopting the amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion passes. The amendment is adopted.
Do we know who passed it? Who moved it last time?
I think it was
Mr. Chair.
Representative Westrom.
Mr. Chair, I'd renew the motion to pass this bill, recommend this bill pass, and be referred to the Judiciary Committee as amended.
It's been moved by Representative Westrom to renew the motion that the bill pass and be referred to Judiciary Policy and Finance. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion passes. Members, meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.